This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
The title of this discussion that I'm moderating, I'm happy to be moderating, is Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in Education. And so what we're going to focus on is really little nuggets of information for creating fair, accessible, and supportive learning environments all across the educational spectrum that respect, that truly respect and value the diverse needs of all students. And I'm joined by a set of rock stars here who have some great bios that you can find in your program. I'll start with Miss Elizabeth Pachuca, who's a colleague of mine, who has worked in the early childhood space as a teacher for well over 20 years, probably in the same classroom, right? Yeah, she's at the Home Avenue Early Learning Academy here in San Diego. Can we welcome Ms. Pachuca? And I have to her left, Mr. Otto Lana, who's a college freshman at the University of San Diego. Yeah, yeah. He's an award-winning poet, writer, consultant, filmmaker, actor, lyricist, and self-advocate championing the rights of those with communication disabilities. So let's welcome Otto. And to his left is Otto's communication specialist. And her name is Shelly Lana. We were on the phone a couple of weeks ago. It's kind of hard to see who's down the line. Is that Andrew? Okay. So Andrew, another rock star. Let me pull up his bio here. Andrew is a recent college graduate. From the University of Wisconsin. You can clap for that. His degree is in political science. He's a San Diego native, and he does a lot of work in the realm of advocacy for others. So let's welcome Andrew. And next we have Terrence Patridge, phenomenal musician, well known in the San Diego area for his contributions. He's currently studying music at Berkeley, correct?
Yes, Berkeley College of Music.
Berkeley College of Music, and he has done phenomenal things. And to his left is his mom, Therese Davis, who works locally here at our San Diego Regional Center, which is really vital in terms of getting children the support services that they need. She also has a practice on the side, so you may want to grab her contact information at some point. Last, but certainly not least, is Dr. Grace. And she comes from one of our local universities here, Point Loma Nazarene, with a wealth of experience inside and outside the classroom. Please welcome her. Now, how this is going to go, I have a series of questions that I'll ask our panelists. I'll try to be the best referee and offer equal amount of time to everyone on the panel. There's probably about five or six questions that we'll run through. And then at the end, we'll have an opportunity for you all to ask questions of our panelists. Fair enough? Are we ready to rock and roll? Okay. Elizabeth, we'll start with you. Is that okay? All right. Can you please describe your experience as an educator providing services, particularly as it relates to children with diverse needs?
As I tell my parents, my English is not perfect, but my love for your kids is perfect. And I don't need to have a BA or master degree or doctor degree to love your children and take care of them the best I could. I am an educator working with children with special needs from autism, speech delays, and other medical issues. And just to name a few things, as an educator, it's been a passion working with your children and be part of their development and working with the parents at the same time. At our Head Start program, we use different assessments, education screening tools to support each child based on their individual needs. And finally, each child's families is also a big support with different resources to help the children be successful in their education journey. I have one experience that stays on my brain forever. One of my kids, he don't eat no vegetables, no fruits, only apple, banana. So we start trying to encourage him to eat something, but it failed. So finally, I find out he loves dinosaurs. So I start making stories with a skeletal dinosaur and Miriam and big dinosaur. That he don't eat meat. So we start playing with them. Finally, I say, if you want to be a strong dinosaur, we need to eat our vegetables and fruits. So he start trying. And one day I told mom, I said, he's eating salad. And she looked at me like, really? So I had to take a video of him eating the salad after half year being with us, and I sent it to mom. So when she come back to pick him up, he come to me and say, Miss Pachuca, how you did that? And I go like, I didn't know what she was talking about. I forgot about the video. And she say, he's been 2 years with, what is the name of that? Nutrition therapy, 2 years. She don't even make him to put anything on his mouth. And he's eating salad now. So that's one of my stories. I'm trying to help my kids with special needs. We love him, everybody. We love all of them. And I'm trying to teach my other kids that we are the same but different, and we are different but the same. And they become helpers to us and to the child who needs help. So I told them, it looks big, but he's little. So you are the helper. You're going to help our little friend with whatever they need. So sometimes they make a mess and everything. And one of the kids tell to another one, let's go help, blah, 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 because he's big, but he's little. So let's go clean up for him. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And certainly we appreciate your love for the children, because that's ultimately what's most important. You're going to hear a lot of little common buzzwords throughout these responses that are good for all children. So pay attention to the common thread as we get the responses. Otto, coming from a student perspective, can you describe some of your experiences, in receiving supportive services throughout your educational journey? Oh, absolutely.
It's thinking outside the box. Way to go. I love that. First, I want to discuss how word choice matters in special needs or human needs. it is more acceptable to ask about my experience as an individual who has specific support needs, whose current success is only because I was provided access and support to a robust system of communication, a text-based system, and a literacy-based academic curriculum. Prior to access and support to effective communication tools, I was languishing in a special day class with preschool activities and functional life skill goals such as brushing my teeth and washing my hands. I was misdiagnosed as intellectually disabled and not given any academic instruction. I was not taught critical thinking skills. I was not taught anything meaningful at all. I was in a time warp, a prison of perpetual preschool, until I was 12 years old.
Thank you. Andrew, same question. Can you talk about a little bit about your experience throughout your educational journey and the supportive services that you may have received?
Of course. So originally, I was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3. I was born up in LA, and then we ended up moving down to San Diego because we couldn't really find any great schools that could support me in kindergarten. But growing up here, there are a lot of great people that supported me in school, in academic support classes, and my parents as well. And like, they would help me keep up with everything. I always wanted to do well in school. And sometimes I didn't always get the grades I wanted, so I just had to keep working at it and use the support I could get, so I could get where I want to be and make sure I could keep up with all my other classmates and friends. And that helped me get into a good college and helped me be able to live on my own and graduate. And even now, to this day, I still use good support systems that aren't necessary for myself, and they help me get where I want to be.
Thank you. Terrence, same question. Please describe your educational journey and the support services that you may have received throughout that journey.
I was really excited to go to college because I wanted to meet classmates and professors, but most of all, I wanted to study music. I knew that I would need some help in learning about college life. In my case, I started college in a San Diego Community College District. So I lived at home. I was going to in-person classes, but sometimes I had to go to more than one campus. My facilitator helped me to find tutoring services and other campus resources.
Thank you. Now, Therese, you're a practitioner, but yet a parent. So I know you got some golden nuggets for us on the journey and the experience. Please share.
So the first thing I have to say is thank you to ATPF, not only for this invitation to be here, but for your support over the years. Everyone is here because of that fabulous young man who you saw give his opening and his incredible parents. So thank you, Dana, for everything. Rebecca, everyone. That ties into what Damon just asked me. So one of the things that I was told when Terrence was recently, when he was younger, diagnosed at the age of 4, we had a pediatric neurologist who said, you can't raise a child like this on your own. Okay? So that would be something that I would encourage all parents to realize, that you're here either in person or online because you have this great resource of ATPF. This model sitting next to me was Terrence's 3rd through 5th grade teacher. She is still in our lives, and she has a huge, huge part of his life
And I have no doubt that we wouldn't be sitting here without her.
So, build your team. Stay hydrated. Get some sleep, like our doctor told us earlier. When you can. This one used to stay up 22 hours a day. For a few years. So, there's a lot to be gained from the wisdom here. And the wisdom here. And we're just getting started.
Thank you. Now, Grace, we know you worked in higher education, but you have a pretty unique story how you entered this space. Can you share a little bit about that journey?
Yes. First of all, I'm already crying, so thank you. My sister was born with developmental whole thing, so many things. Has continued to just struggle many ways. And obviously that led me to just kind of growing up, and I would play ambulance with her instead of teacher or, house. I'd play, I'm the doctor and I'm the ambulance, and, you know, putting her on my back, and we'd, that was the ambulance sound, just so you know. And we take her and, so I realized I grew up a little bit lending to that. And my brother and sister adopted from El Salvador as well. That was what I knew, but obviously that led me to have a bit more understanding, a bit more of a diverse view. And I was going to go to school to study psychology, but I fell in love with the kids with autism, and it was in high school in a peer mentor program that we had in my high school back in Philly. And I realized I like these kids, trying to figure them out and trying to see what they're doing. And I was just so curious, and it was so fun. Like, once I figured something out, I just felt like a rock star. And so came here, started teaching. Terrence was in my first class many moons ago. I don't know how he got old. I'm not old. Fell in love with him, and then Therese, and many of our students. It's just been awesome to see them grow and get older and keep doing amazing things. And then I was an autism behavior specialist for the San Diego Unified School District for many years, and I was running around trying to support all kids and all schools. And then got the invitation to do adjunct stuff on the side, and I realized, ooh, I can be proactive and train these teachers before they get out there. And so that's what I've been doing ever since, and I absolutely love it. And I'm also part of CAPTAIN, which is the California Autism Professional Training and Information Network. And it's a statewide coalition of just regional center, family Head Start, universities, K-12. And the whole idea of this behind it is just to make sure that we are giving out good information and what are evidence-based practices for schools, for teams, for families, for everyone to use. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, Grace, I'm going to stay with you for a second. Now, that's quite an extensive, for lack of a better word, resume and experience. What are two lessons that you learned throughout the whole entire journey?
Only two.
You're limited on time a little bit.
No, I think one thing for sure is the community, and you can't do anything in isolation. She's given me credit for Terrence, but no. This was a proud mama from the beginning. She knew what she wanted for Terrence, and going alongside of her was easy because she already had that, that big dream. And I see, with Shelly and Otto, I met Shelly a while ago, and she came in and talked to my future students. Otto presented at one of the conferences I've been at. This community is just absolutely amazing, and it's wonderful to lean on people. And in outcomes for kids, outcomes for anyone requires the community. So that's number one. And number two is your expectations are what the kids will rise to. So if you have those low expectations, that's where we're at. And you never know, and you have to keep that ceiling high and you just keep doing the good work, keep doing the good things, find out what works for the kids, find out their interests. I mean, Terrence didn't have the music thing necessarily in elementary school, but he had the math thing. And it's so neat to see how it translated into something that's amazing for him. But if you had asked me, you know, my first year teaching, would I assume that he's going to go to Berkeley? You know, unfortunately, no. I didn't have that in my thoughts at the time. I just wanted to keep doing what he wanted to do and keep pushing. You know, he loved math. He was going into the gen ed math class for that. And so I just kept following him, whatever, you know, wherever he wanted to go, that's what we wanted to do. And that's what I've done for all of our students. But if I had said, no, I don't think he can do that, you know, because that's my expectation, then that's where he would have risen. So always keep those expectations nice and high and let them lead you to where you want to go.
Therese, same question. A couple lessons learned throughout your journey.
I think one of the lessons that I've learned is that you must be a lifelong learner. It doesn't matter how you're learning. We have all this technology now. You can learn from a TikTok video. It can take 45 seconds of your time, and you can learn something. You can read. You can go to things like this, but just keep your mind open and keep your heart open, and you can learn. I learned from a young gentleman while I was standing in line trying to use the restroom. He was teaching me all kinds of stuff, so just make sure you're open to learning and listening and being receptive, because if you're not in that receptive space, you're not going to be able to take in what someone may be able to teach you. And sometimes it's just the importance of a smile. So that's one. And two is humility. It is absolutely necessary to stay in a humble place. You will never know it all. And I've come to be very thankful for that, because it allows for collaboration. I have always been the type of person, well, I was a journalism major at first. Can I say I went to USC at this UC school? we're not going to talk football.
Doesn't exist there.
So I was a journalism major, so I've always kind of been curious about things. And so asking questions and not knowing something has not been something that's been a fearful place for me. So if you reduce your fear and get your curiosity to sort of replace that, you'll have a very interesting journey.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Humility is so underrated. You know, we get our fancy titles and our corner offices, and we lose sight of being humble. Great reminder. Terrence, share some of the lessons that you've learned throughout your journey.
Two lessons I learned were how important it is to learn how to communicate better with my facilitator and professors, classmates, tutors, and my mom. I also learned how to improve with time management. When you're in college, deadlines are very important. If I could turn an assignment early or get to class early, I would try to do that.
Andrew, same question.
So my thoughts are that it's important to know your worth, know how far you can go, like try like figure that out. And part of that is to surround yourself like with people like that are right for you. It can be friends, mentors, and yeah, just having the right people is really important for just to, if you want to get where you are. And yeah, you can always, like, kind of like be inspired by others, and like try to like figure out and like figure out where you need to go. Like, but the thing is, you should pave your own path. Like, you shouldn't like try directly compare yourself to others, because like truth is, it's different. Everyone's path is different, and first figure out what's best for you, and that will help you a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Otto, same question.
I'm so impressed with my fellow panelists. I am humbled to be among you today. I feel the passion up here and feel blessed to be able to share my journey. We are creating waves of change. Watch out. You are in the splash zone now.
Love it.
I have learned is a quote from Maya Angelou. People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. As an individual with apraxia, I was underestimated and overlooked. I was not valued. I was not worthy. I was isolated, segregated, and forgotten. No one knew what I wanted or needed because I had no system of communication. I was warehoused and was waiting until I was 22 to exit the system to nothing. I felt useless. I felt stuck. I felt hopeless. There are 5 million people in the United States with speech-related disabilities. State and federal government agencies track data for funding and support of individuals who are blind or deaf. But there is no such tracking for individuals with speech-related disabilities. In educational settings, communication access and support is lacking or non-existent. I do not believe this is by design. I just believe there are not enough role models to demonstrate success with alternative and augmentative communication tools and the trained support staff to facilitate an interdependent inclusive experience. Apraxia is misunderstood and misguided. Therapists and educators were trained to believe motor and sensory differences were behaviors that should be extinguished or managed. Instead of providing a system of communication, I was given unending hours of mind-numbing, meaningless tabletop tasks for junk food rewards. It is not enough to simply say, our goal as educators in the special education system is to keep all the students safe. We deserve so much more. This is an absolute minimum. We deserve educators who are brave enough to think outside the box. We deserve an inclusive, equitable, and accessible education. When I was 9, I met a speech therapist who gave me a QWERTY, a keyboard, and a text-based system of communication. My life changed forever. I felt empowered. I felt engaged. It still took years to find a school that would support my communication needs and provide an age-appropriate literacy-based curriculum. The good news is I graduated from high school in June, and I am a freshman at University of San Diego, the first student who uses AAC to communicate.
Elizabeth, now we know you've been in the classroom quite a long time. Can you share some lessons that you've learned throughout your experience?
During my experience with children with special needs, I learned that one little thing, it makes a big difference on that child's life. Even you don't even think it's something big. You just take it out from under the manga. But to see their smile and the parents to be so happy and thankful, that's a big difference. We just do a little bit for them. We are not experts or professionals, but we do it with all our love. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm coming right back to you, as you can imagine. In our work in Head Start, right, we provide comprehensive services, right? So that can be anything from health, nutrition, mental health, a wide variety of services. How important is that to meeting the needs of all children?
It is very important because when you meet the needs of the children, it's that way they're going to improve on life later. And it's very important to teach the other kids to be compassion, empathy, and kindness to them, and learn that disability is nothing wrong with that. They are normal kids like they are. They the same but different but the same. They have two eyes, two hands, two legs. So it's not a big difference between both of them.
Thank you. Otto, how important is it to have an extended support system, parents, families, community members, to help you or through your educational journey?
It's well said. Again, we need to address word choice. Words matter. Words create worlds. Special needs are human needs, and an individual feels included when they are included. Being an integral part of a classroom, a person who belongs there not because it is the law, but because it is the right thing to do. Access and support to a robust system of communication is the only way inclusion is authentic and not tokenism and ableism. One can only be included in an environment if they have authentic communication. We do not help individuals. This gives them a dynamic of subjugation, of being inferior. Educators, employers, and community leaders need to transcend this dynamic and consider one of interdependence, to consider proper supports and accessibility. We can all learn from each other. Accessibility and inclusion is so much more than automatic doors, ramps, and enlarged bathroom stalls. When we know better, we must do better. I work with the Center for Youth Voice, Youth Choice, informing the public about alternatives to conservatorship. In California, the law is called supported decision making. You can only live an authentic life when you have communication and the capacity to make informed choices. If you are never given instruction in critical thinking during your 22 years in the educational system, you are destined for a life of someone else's making. It will not be your life.
Yeah. Well said. Andrew, as a recent college graduate, how important, obviously you've been successful, but how important was it to have that type of extended support system?
Yeah, it's extremely important. And the extended support system, it can help in so many ways. For me, you just stay organized, keep on top of it. And if you have aspirations to live on your own and do big things, you need that, the support system. I work with a company called Virtual Hall, and they help support me through college. And it's just really important to have something like that.
Mm-hmm. And Terrence, currently in your studies, you're carrying a heavy load. How important is that extended support system to you and your journey?
It's super important to have a support system. Individuals with special needs, like everyone else, needs help to be successful. I will not be able to be in college without a support system. My support system has helped me to feel included in the educational process. I have advocated for myself and learned when I need to ask for help. Sometimes it's still hard to ask for help because I want to do things on my own.
Yeah. And Therese, speaking for all of us parents in the room, we can't do it alone. We need support in all kinds of ways, socially, emotionally, sometimes financially. You know, my kids kind of drain me dry. Share, please share.
That's one of the reasons I said stay hydrated, Damon. Because you will be drained dry.
Water.
Support systems, you know, as you heard, I work at San Diego Regional Center. So, you know, I'm not here as a representative necessarily, but I do want to say, if you are in the state of California, there is something called a regional center system. So there are, I believe, 21 regional centers in the state, depending on where you are. In the state of California, there will be a regional center that will support you. That is a big source of support for the people who are eligible for those services. So that helps to unlock doors to all kinds of things, and the services are lifelong. Again, going back to, you cannot be expected to do everything all by yourself all the time. We have lived in other states, and there are various support systems there as well. So I would, you know, highly encourage you to, no matter where you are, if you're watching online, really just research what's in your area, and do not be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Indeed. Grace, same question on the importance of extended support systems.
One of the biggest things, obviously family, right, is huge. But one of the biggest things is peers, training peers. As much as, you know, a teacher loves their kids, they're only going to be in that kid's life for a couple years, you know. But it's the peers. And if we start at the very, very, very beginning and just explain that everyone's got different brains, you don't have to call out names, don't have to do, you know, some people are good at some things, some people aren't so good at some things, right? And just have it as a natural friendships and starting from the very beginning, that's such an authentic support. These are the kids that will see them outside of school. These are the kids that will go to football games, right? We at Point Loma, we recognize that peers are really important at the college level. And so we got a grant and tried to model a peer mentor program from other universities. And now it's a class. We have mentors that come that want to learn and just be mentees. And they learn just as much. They learn probably even more about how to support and friendships and things like that. We ask them to, you know, meet for coffee, check on, you know, tests, just basic friend supports. And I think that's, you know, that's amazing at that level. And Therese and I were part of a group that created curriculum for K-12 as well, because it's just so important to bring those peers in. And, you know, kids are scared of what they don't know, but they're so easy when they get it, you know? And so if we just start it from the very beginning, you know, they are wonderful support systems, and they are truly lifelong. Thank you.
So kind of in the interest of time, this next question, I'm going to talk to our young adults, our students. You know, oftentimes we take for granted, and whether it's in an educational setting or a social setting, we really maybe take for granted that we're being inclusive, but in reality, we're probably not. What advice, Terrence, what advice would you have to give to the audience about making sure that we're truly being inclusive in all settings?
I would suggest that somebody ask the person if he or she feels included. And if the person says no, ask them what they think needs to be done so they could feel included. I think it shows respect. We ask someone if they feel included instead of assuming how they feel.
Thank you. Andrew, same question for you, my friend.
All right, yeah, so some advice I have is to build relationships and deepen them. That's the way like people will include you, but if they're not, you're not certain about that, you can have like cues, like if you're cute, like maybe like I'd say, oh, next time I'd love to go with you. Yeah, like then like you should like think about that, like when like you're planning something and yeah, invite people to them. That's like something I've had to deal with before. So yeah, and I've often like not felt included. Like sometimes like I felt like an afterthought in my friend groups, and or I just not a core part of the group if they make plans. So yeah, like that's just sometimes like being included is like I've like been on the outside. And then also like another thing like that can help build relationships and inclusion is like just like social activities like and networking. I'll give an example, like over the summer I was on a group trip throughout Europe, and most of the people on the trip were Australian. Shout out to anyone watching from there. And they did a great job of like building like a whole dynamic and like making like group and like welcoming me, like having a new friend group, like that made me feel included, and like that therefore like I was able and really enjoy the trip. So yeah, just including people is very important just in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Andrew. Thank you. Now, Otto, how do we not just talk the talk, but walk the walk as it relates to having individuals truly feel included in our environments?
Yes. No one thinks Taylor Swift doesn't have armies of support. If she has support to be successful, so should we.
Big clap for that.
Neighbor in the back of a general education classroom with a paraprofessional and a parallel curriculum is not inclusion. Inclusion is not a geographic location. Inclusion is proper support and accessibility which allows for integrated experiences throughout the entire day. 1 in 4 people are disabled. If 25% of the room you are in is not populated by disabled people, most likely there is an issue with inclusion and accessibility. There are infinite excuses to segregate students, and they are all based in prejudice, ableism, racism, fear, or just sheer ignorance. Yeah.
Okay, we're rounding the corner. Elizabeth, this is my last question. How do we deepen and broaden our efforts to ensure we provide the best possible educational experience for all children?
I believe we need to train our teachers and have extra support in the classroom with children with disabilities and with special needs. It is hard for a teacher with 20 children trying to care for our child that demands all her attention, has to be one-on-one. And who will take care of other 19 kids if I go one-on-one with children with disabilities? I believe in inclusion, and it is a great opportunity for the children with disability to be part of their regular learning environment. This also teaches other children to be kind and respectful to others. Unfortunately, it makes it hard when you don't have support in the classroom or the parents are on denial of the disability of their own child. Thank you.
Thank you. Otto, how do we deepen and broaden our efforts to ensure we're providing the best possible educational experience for all children?
Robust systems of communication. Everything begins and ends with communication. You cannot know what someone wants or needs unless you can have an authentic exchange of communication. People in education seem to conveniently forget that the INIEP stands for individual. Far too often we with specific support needs are told, we have never done that for anyone else, or no one has ever asked for that before. Why should someone else needing a specific type of support be the criteria for consideration of the requested support? You need to listen to the experts. I am an expert at being Otolana. I know the things that work and the things that don't. Support needs evolve and change just like people evolve and change. Presuming a person needs one type of support for their entire educational career is ableist. Presume competence. It is the least harmful course of action.
Yeah. I'll be right in the door.
Andrew, how do we provide the best possible educational experience for all children?
Yeah, so something just that educators need to realize, every neurodiverse individual is different. Like, it's not, don't make assumptions that, like, they're all the same. And yeah, we all have different needs and challenges, and we'll have to, like, accommodate those specific needs for these individuals.
Thank you. Same question, Terrence, the advice on the best possible educational experience.
Give everybody a chance to live their dreams. And if a person needs help, don't make them feel embarrassed. Everybody needs help sometimes. Have an open mind and an open heart.
Therese, same question.
I think it starts with awareness of what everyone on this panel has been discussing, and what I would hope that everyone who is at this conference and is interested in, and that's really having a space for everyone to shine, and I think it starts there. So it starts in your mind with that thought, and it's usually your heart that then drives you to go past all the barriers, like Otto was saying. It really shouldn't matter if you haven't done this before. I'm the expert on what I need. And you will see that your heart and your mind will lead you beyond embarrassment. You know, so not that you will ever get to the point of friction, arguing, and all of that. Sometimes it happens, but advocacy does not necessarily have to be volatile. It can come from a good place. It can come from a place of just saying, you know, really, we're all here, so there's really space for all of us. And if there isn't, let's get to working on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Same question, Grace.
Oh, man. Okay. Let me round this out. Obviously, policy, a bigger picture, is more funding, the levels that are promised in IDEA, you know, actually supporting our schools, having getting more special ed teachers out there. We know we're short, and we are throwing them into classes that they're not prepared as interns. I mean, it's just the state of funding and our support system for special ed teachers to continue to be there and not burn out is dismal right now. You know, on a whole, right, if I could have a magic wand, that would be the first thing that I would work on. As a child, as just working with a kid, it's make sure that kid's happy and make sure that kid's learning what they want to learn. You know, again, follow their lead, but you want education to be enjoyable, right? That the whole reason that we're learning is because we want to learn. And there's even more stuff right now about, you know, kids just, they don't really care about school in general because they can watch it on YouTube and they can learn on YouTube in 2 seconds versus, you know, going to school and listening to a teacher. So how do we make education fun again? How do we make it relevant and meaningful and important? And I want all kids, but especially our kids who are already going to be coming up with are coming against, you know, communication challenges or accommodations not being met. Like, it's already extra hard. So how do we get that out of the way? How do we make it fun? How do we make these kids happy to be there and learning and we follow their lead? That's it in a nutshell.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
So, before we move to a little Q&A, I think we have about 5 minutes for Q&A. Again, my young adults, I'll ask, you know, Terrence, any final words or thoughts that you would like to share with the audience?
Yes. Just want to thank you so much for being here, like, today. And so I appreciate it for having me on this panel. And so it feels great to be in a panel. So thank you so much.
Yeah, Andrew, any final words or thoughts?
Yeah, just to reiterate what I've said, just knowing your abilities and understanding what you deserve is really crucial to, like, going where you need to go. Just, like, and make sure that you have people who encourage you and don't tell you, like, that you can't do something. Then, like, you can reach your goals. And, yeah, and it's a real challenge out there because the obstacles we face are unique.
Final words, Otto.
Yes. Lean into joy. Autism Tree Project Foundation is an organization that provides support to the community for free. No charge. Please, when remembering to donate, pay it forward, be generous, look around. We all know neurodiverse people. Thank you for your time today. Follow me on Instagram at @otto_types. Check out my website www.ottosmottos.com. Thank you for listening. Now get out there and make a difference. Be the type of change you want to see.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. And before we go to Q&A, I think my esteemed panelists deserve a standing ovation for this powerful, powerful session. I think we got 2 minutes for any questions from the audience for our panelists. I think we have one there.
This is actually specifically for Otto. I know you started with an AAC when you were 9, and I was curious what your progression was, like what program you used and the progression to what you're using now.
The icon-based stuff is all crap. Just use text-based systems. You know, the alphabet.
He specifically uses Frolip over text for this type of format for conferences and stuff. But for just running around, he uses a letter board, and then someone will read the letters, and he communicates that way because this is not an easy thing to take for the beach, to hiking, to anything. It's hard. It's fragile, it breaks, the hop-hop strings break, it's hard. So just having a text-based system, he can talk about anything.
Thank you for sharing, Otto.
Do we have time for them?
I just wanted to thank you guys, Terrence, Andrew, and Otto. You guys are a huge inspiration. Otto, just listening to you, you've opened my eyes a lot. My daughter is deaf, but she also uses a communication device. And hearing your words really helped open my eyes so much. And there's going to be a lot of changes that I'm going to be making with her and giving her more of a voice and not being her voice. So thank you for that. First and foremost, and my question is to the teachers, parents, what do you recommend for parents who possibly feel they're also neurospicy to learning about themselves, trying to make changes for their child now? You know, I know it's better late than never, but what recommendations do you guys have when it's so hard to find support out there as a parent? It's hard enough to find support for your child, but as a parent, you know, trying to make the better changes and trying to do all that, what recommendations do you give for parents for that? First thing I would say is to make sure that you have the supports that you need. It's kind of like that thing where you're on the plane and they say, if the thing drops, you got to put it on yourself first before you help the child that's next to you. So if you're running on fumes, that's going to affect what kind of resources you have within you to pull from to help the child. And I can't speak for everyone's child, but my child was very observant of me. Right? So, even to this day. So, they pick up on if you're tired. They pick up on if you're frustrated and all that. And you still have to be human. You still have to give yourself those times where you kind of just need to either stare at the wall or yell at your pillow or whatever you have to do. And so I say it seems counterintuitive when you're asking about how do you do something for your child, and I'm talking about you, but it's necessary. So I always say, see if you're okay, then tap into your support system because they'll be able to be there for you. And I'm going to hand it to Grace.
I would just say be gentle with yourself. We're all human too, just like she was saying. And you know, my mom always used to say to me, just try to be a good parent every other day, and it averages out.
Yeah.
So give yourself a little bit of patience yourself.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.